Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Central Asian Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Nick C., the host of the channel. Today we'll be talking to Dr. Rico Isaacs about his new book, Film and Identity in Kazakhstan, Soviet and Post-Soviet Culture in Central Asia, published by I.B. Torres. Dr. Isaacs is an associate professor of politics at the University of Lincoln in the UK. His research focuses on nation building and institutions in post-Soviet Central Asia. He writes regularly on Central Asian politics and culture, and he has also authored or co-authored several other book publications, including Theorizing Central Asian Politics, The State, Ideology, and Power with Palgrave Macmillan, Nation Building and Identity in the Post-Soviet Space, New Tools and Approaches with Rutledge, and also Party System Formation in Kazakhstan, Between Formal and Informal Politics, also with Rutledge. Rico, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nick. It's a pleasure to be here.
And it's a pleasure to have you. So we have a very exciting book about film and identity in Kazakhstan. But before we get to the meat of the book, I was hoping you could introduce yourself a little bit. Tell us about your educational background and how you got interested in Central Asia and the post-Soviet world.
Yeah, so I received my PhD in the UK in politics. Back in 2005, and my PhD was on Kazakhstan, and actually the book that you mentioned there, Party System Formation in Kazakhstan, that was essentially my PhD work. But my interest in Central Asia goes back further. I studied at the LSC and did a master's in post-Soviet politics there where we covered Central Asia. But I think prior to that, I was always interested in authoritarianism. I was always interested in non-democratic regimes. How they're sustained, the nature of power, the nature of obedience, and the nature of institutions and how they operate in these non-democratic contexts. And so Central Asia became, I mean, I'm sure as you're aware and your listeners are aware, Central Asia is obviously a very good lightning rod for those types of questions. And I mean, Central Asia appeared to me on the map after the collapse of the Soviet Union. I was in my very formative years as a teenager when the Soviet Union collapsed. And growing up, I'd always understood there was this entity called the Soviet Union, and then it collapsed, and there was all these different countries suddenly appeared, and some of them had these funny names, such as Kazakhstan or Kyrgyzstan. And I think this is where my interest arose as a teenager, and then having studied Russian politics and Russian history, I graduated to Central Asia sort of very slowly and tentatively, and that's how I ended up on Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan and Turkmenistan and so on.
Great. And, well, I can't help but notice that this book stands out a little bit from your other publications, whereas your past publications have been solely focused, I think, on questions which can be put into the category of political science. I think you were a little bit more creative in this book because you're looking at film and identity, but as I understand, you're also trying to pull some conclusions about the nature of Kazakh society, post-Soviet Kazakh society specifically, and also maybe looking for a reflection of politics within that. Is that right? And if so, how did you come to this project? Why did you decide to study cinema in Kazakhstan?
Yes, I think that's right, Nick. Principally, you know, I'm not a film studies person. That's not my background. And I don't say this as some kind of qualifier or trying to defend myself in this way. But it was more that I came at film and cinema in Kazakhstan from a what I would call a political science or political studies perspective, and in using cinema as an analytical lens to try and understand something about the nature of these debates that I have been alerted to since studying post-Soviet Kazakhstan around nationhood and identity. And what does cinema tell us about the nature of these debates, how people understand identity in Kazakhstan and in its different forms in this post-Soviet context? But in relation to, you know, why this particular project, how did it come about? How is it different from the work that I've previously done on you know, political institutions, formal and informal politics, and so on? It's partly serendipity, I guess. I mean, I first went to Kazakhstan in 2006 and spent a year out there conducting field work, interviewing lots of politicians, and it was very serious stuff in that sense. And you know, to while away the time, you know, when I had some downtime, I'd go to the DVD shop. And slowly, over the years, every time I went back, I kept seeing this sort of section on Kazakh cinema get bigger and bigger. And I was very puzzled, interested, I should say. I mean, I like films. I like watching films and have an interest in cinema. At the time, I guess I was falling in love with Kazakhstan. So these two came together and I'd watch films. And then after I'd finished my PhD and published the book on parties and institutions and published some articles, I was looking for another project. And I remember one particular time being in the Meloman store in Almaty and paying attention to all this Kazakh cinema, and I'd watched a few films. I was like, oh, well. And there was all these big budget films that had been produced that were, I mean, akin to some kind of sort of government propaganda about, you know, nation building and identity and sort of foundation myths. This I'm referring here in particular to the films Nomad and Mumbala. And I thought to myself, oh, there's probably an easy article I could write here about this. As, you know, as cinema as a sort of form of government propaganda when it comes to nation building. And I thought, oh, I'll just, you know, I'll watch these films, I'll analyze them a bit, and I'll write a paper. And this will make my research manager at work happy. And what happened was that I did start to write this, but it became clear to me the more films that I watched is that the story was much more complex than this sort of state-led narrative about Kazakh nationhood and identity. And that I started to unpack these multiple narratives, these different narratives in some of the films I was watching. And then I was able to kind of match that with my understanding of the discourses and debates that was ongoing about nationhood and identity in Kazakhstan. And so eventually I did write this article, but it was more complex than I originally intended. But as I was going out giving conference papers and seminar papers about this article, I mean, people seemed to be quite interested in it because, you know, it wasn't the usual, perhaps slightly stale and serious work on political institutions. I mean, it's still serious work, I guess, but I guess it was more fun. It was more creative, as you say. And when I was going out giving talks about the first piece of research I did with the article, people were, you know, there's lots of questions and there's lots of discussions and lots of debates. And all of a sudden, I felt like there was a larger story to tell, even from the initial article I wrote. And so then that's when I set about to try and write the book, which would tell this larger story about how, using cinema as a lens, to try and trace and track all these different debates around nationhood and identity in Kazakhstan from the Soviet period as well, through the period called the New Wave, which I'm sure we'll touch on in a moment, which was in the late 80s, early 90s, and through into the post-Soviet period. One thing I'd like to add, actually, is that it became one of the things is that when I was in Kazakhstan doing research for my PhD and afterwards, I would spend a lot of time interviewing politicians and political elites. And this got a little bit boring and uninteresting. And I also thought, maybe interviewing film directors and people involved in the film industry would be much more fun. And it was.
And I think we'll get to this later, because I do have some questions about kind of your source material and like who you were discussing these topics with on the ground in Kazakhstan. But let's kind of start chronologically here, because actually film production in what is now Kazakhstan actually began before the Soviet Union. Is that right? There was a brief kind of expansion, if we want to call it that. That might be a bit of an exaggeration, but there was a presence of film production, or at least film consumption, in what is now Kazakhstan in the late imperial period. How did you find out about this? Where are you pulling this information from? And can you describe that in a little bit of detail?
Yeah, I think it's a stretch. I mean, yes, there was some film consumption in Kazakhstan in the very late imperial period. The first ever cinema in Kazakhstan opened in 1910 in what was then called Vereny, which is, you know, now Almaty. The distribution and showing of films was incredibly limited in Central Asia at the time. And of course, it would have been silent films and newsreels and so on. I would say it was very limited. And in terms of where that information came from, it was mostly from sources within Kazakhstan, people that had written on the development of cinema in Kazakhstan, scholars there, and actually some writers from the Soviet period who had written about cinema as well. But I think it gets more interesting actually after the revolution, which is where there's the Russian Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, I should say, which is when we get an explicit attempt to try and promote cinema in Kazakhstan, actually, and in Central Asia in general, where there's a deliberate effort on the part of the Bolshevik government to promote cinema or the showing of films throughout the East. They set up the Vostok Kino, which was dedicated really to the sort of the distribution of film showings in Central Asia. But of course, on the one hand, it's quite straightforward to build cinemas and show newsreels and propaganda films in a city like Almaty or Tashkent. But particularly in Kazakhstan, you've got lots of people living in the rural areas. You've got nomadic populations still. And so what the Russians tended to do was set up these traveling cinema shows where they would go and they would travel around the steppe and try and show newsreels and films and to these populations in the rural areas.
And how were these attempts successful? Did people really come and watch these films? I'm sure this is a difficult question to find. We'll get to the question of reception later, but do you have any sense of whether or not people liked these early Bolshevik films, or if it was, there was something novel in seeing a film for the first time?
I mean, that's very hard to answer. I mean, I don't think there's any, from what I have read, there's no sort of specific data on how people received these films at the time. But you can only imagine, much like in the West, actually, when, you know, people were first subjected to cinema, that it was something extraordinary. I mean, of course, there's the very famous anecdote about people seeing this early film of the train riding into the station and people running out of the cinema because they thought that it was going to come through, the train was going to come through the screen. Now, I don't know how the peoples of the Central Asian steppe responded, but of course, I think my own understanding of cinema and the history of cinema is that, of course, it would have been something of wonder and I guess something slightly magical at the time. How they were received in terms of the actual content of the films. I think that's very difficult to answer. I don't think there's a lot of sort of historical data pertaining to that.
Absolutely. And it absolutely would have been something kind of even mind-blowing to a Central Asian nomad, for instance. I mean, this is incredible. So at this time, as far as I understand, most of the films that would have been shown in these traveling exhibitions would have been either Russian films or even imported films from abroad. But when does film production in Kazakhstan actually begin? And then also, if we're going to talk about that, I had a question about the term national film and whether you think Kazakh film has always been kind of framed as being national film, and maybe what are the uses and limitations of that term national film?
Yeah, that's a really good question. In terms of these sort of antecedents or what's called the birth of Kazakh cinema, there's a big debate within the sort of few film specialists in Kazakhstan about this, and there's lots of discussion about, you know, what is the first Kazakh film, and it depends. I mean, I'm personally, because I have some skepticism in terms of this idea of what we, I think conceptually in film studies is called national cinema, and I'll come to that. I'm not sure how helpful really this discussion of when does Kazakh cinema start, or what's the birth of Kazakh cinema, because it depends on a number of things. And you know, you can look at a film like Turksib, which is an early Soviet sort of documentary film that was released in 1929, which kind of details almost like an ethnographic film to some extent that details the construction of the Turkestan-Siberian railway. And, you know, because partially it's shot in Kazakhstan, does this make it a Kazakh film because of the subject? And to some extent, yes. To many extents, no. Yes, in that we, for the first time, see the depiction of Kazakh people and Kazakh nomads and Central Asians in general in, you know, Soviet propaganda films. And they're depicted in a particular way in national dress and picking cotton and so on. It's a beautiful film, actually, to watch, I have to say. But, of course, it's a Soviet propaganda film about sort of the power of Soviet industry, and it's, you know, it's directed by a Russian, and Russian production the people working in on the production of the film of course are Russians. Then you have in 1939 a feature film called Amangeldi. Again, it's about Amangeldi Imanov, a Kazakh general who was the organizer of the 1916 rebellion against Tsar Nicholas II and his decree to conscript Muslims into the Russian army as part of the war effort. But again, it's usually Russian production, and we don't really get a kind of this sort of full sort of technical people involved in Kazakh film and in the production of film, plus the Kazakh subject, until the 1950s, really, and with Kazakh actors and Kazakh directors. And this is sort of where the debate goes. And this is actually a consequence of the Second World War, in that during the Second World War, a lot of film production and film companies like Mosfilm and Lenin Film were moved to Almaty out of Moscow. What you've got is, as part of this, is a lot of the sort of skills and training that went into film production was then passed on to sort of local Kazakhs who were working in the film industry at that time. And then slowly, this sort of translated in the post-war period to more Kazakhs being involved in film production and directors coming through, particularly a director like Shakin Aymanov, who's also an actor. And so this is when, you know, people start to say, in the 50s, this is really when you get the birth of proper Kazakh cinema. because you've got the production team behind it. It's Kazakh subjects, it's the Kazakh actors, Kazakh directors, and so on. However, you know, I'm not sure if this, when we think about cinema in this way, is something that is discreetly national, is always particularly helpful. I mean, and even during the Soviet period, in that, you know, cinema is something, or films are, you know, particularly now, are something which are always influenced by external stimuli and external factors, whether it be the films by particular directors of another nationality, whether it be that you've always got people of different nationalities working on the films. So I think for me, this idea of discrete bodies of work being a form of particular form of national cinema, I don't think is always very helpful. Whether you can subscribe particular themes, genres, or aesthetic styles to a particular national identity when cinema itself is a very transnational industry and a transnational form. And in film studies, there is a lot of debate around this concept of national cinema and whether you can observe, you know, these kind of discrete bodies of work, which we can say, this is French cinema, this is Italian cinema, this is Russian cinema, Kazakh cinema, and so on. And I guess, you know, to some extent, perhaps you can, but I think in particularly today, in a world of sort of very sort of globalized cinema, I think that's very hard to see. And I don't think it's particularly helpful analytically. Also, if in these attempts to by the Kazakh government, for example, to make very nationally specific films, which again I think we might come to, where even though they seem to be very nationally specific, actually a lot of the things behind them in terms of even the stories, how they're made, were actually quite influenced by Soviet and Russian filmmaking. So does that mean it's a Kazakh film? It's very, I think it's ambiguous in that sense. Just to finally say on this, I mean, I do use the concept of national cinema in the book, but I seek to use it as an analytical frame, as a way to break down and disaggregate all the different modes of production that is necessary to analyze, to try and unpack films and unpack these different discourses and debates in films, and to think about the different audiences and the different genres and the different ways in which the state can or cannot intervene in the production of cinema and the different markets involved and the different influences involved. So I try to use it as an analytical frame, so as a kind of set of things that I wanted to look at when studying cinema and trying to unpack these discourses and narratives of nationhood identity, rather than a conceptual frame to say, I'm trying to identify a particular form of Kazakh cinema.
And so, but with the emergence of these, the film production that, you know, was the main film production in Kazakhstan in Almaty or in Astana? Or what is
it?
Was there a Kazakh film studio? And where was it located?
Yes, so Kazakh Film was located in Almaty. I think, I can't remember the exact date, but I think it was originally established in the late 30s, but mostly as a documentary and news studio. And it was only as a consequence of the war period when all of the other film studios in Moscow, or many of the film studios in Moscow, got relocated to Almaty, that it started doing other types of films, more feature films.
And if we talk about the content of these feature films that emerged, I think you said in the 50s, but especially in the 60s and 70s, wasn't there kind of a strong focus on kind of Kazakh historical figures, or weren't a lot of these films framing things in kind of a national context? So even if the people making these films, if it was a mixture of Russians and even people from Georgia, or, you know, from all over the Soviet Union, the content of the films themselves seems to be national in some way. Would you agree with that? And then could you also give us kind of an overview of what the major films from this period of the 60s were and what they were focused on?
Yes, I think there was an attempt to create or use cinema on the part of the Soviets to use cinema to build up these national heroes, or often it's called the Red Bartirs, so these sort of Soviet heroes, but who have a kind of national character. But they're really projecting often a Soviet form of propaganda. So, yes, and this is by and large was, you know, you could argue was part of Soviet nationalities policy, the attempt to, you know, we were dealing with Soviet nation building in Central Asia at this point, in the 20s, in the 30s, in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s. And this was, and cinema was part and parcel of that. In terms of some of the films, I mean, one film that comes to mind is Shakin Naimanov in the film about Jambul, this famous Kazakh Dombra player and poet, a folk singer. And it is an attempt to be a, to some extent, he's presented as a sort of, you know, Soviet hero, but also a national hero that supports Soviet values and Stalinist values in that sense. And so there's other films like Kizhibek, you know, which is a very nationalist film in this sense, in terms of the projection of particular national, perceived Kazakh national folk tales, Kazakh symbols, this sort of very Kazakh folk myth. But what I would say, I mean, I think what I try to argue in the book is that what we start to see, though, in some of this cinema, particularly in the 60s, and I don't think Kazakhstan in the 60s was unique in this sense among other Soviet republics, but is that cinema is, even though these are films which have some kind of national element, but they're contrived in a very sort of almost Soviet social realist or socialist realist way, I would argue that you start to see very sort of small or efforts, subtle efforts of pushback against the Soviet narrative and the Soviet regime. And in that, in trying to project this sort of very nationalist idea or national projection of, you know, Kazakhstan and Kazakh identity in these films, that to some extent this is going against the Soviet, you know, friendship of all peoples, the all Soviet national, the all Soviet identity discourse. So I think, but I think there is a tension between these things. On the one hand, these films are, of course, formed of Soviet propaganda. On the other hand, I think, particularly with some of the work of Aymanov, Shakin Aymanov, as I've already said, they're very, 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 very subtle forms of dissent in that sense by this kind of real projection of Kazakh national identity and Kazakh nationalism, but it's very subtle.
And so in the third chapter of the book, which I think was probably one of my favorite chapters, if not my favorite chapter, was on something called the Kazakh New Wave, which doesn't really happen until the late 1980s or mid to late 1980s under Perestroika. It's this period when a group of directors known as, and I love this, the Wild Kazakh Boys, kind of respond to the structural changes in the film industry and make a series of decisions. And they start making new films that are something very different from what we had seen in the 60s and 70s and even early 80s. And we get some really interesting films, such as one that I had seen before, and I had no idea that this was a Kazakh film called The Needle, so Igil. I saw this as a student of Russian, and, you know, it's got Viktor Tsoi, this famous late Soviet rock star in it. Where are these directors getting the influence from this film? You know, the fact that they called themselves the New Wave tells me that this is, that they are watching European films or maybe even French films. So how does this all happen?
Yeah, so the Kazakh New Wave, I mean, again, it's another one of these disputed terms about, you know, when does it start, when does it begin, who's in, who's out of the New Wave. But, I mean, I think it's a useful label to kind of make sense of some of the changes that were going on at the time. Some of them were structural, of course, with the advent of both perestroika and glasnost and the changes to the film industry that you mentioned. But I think partly some of it's also a deliberate effort on the part of people who are working for the Kazakh film studio at the time, and that they wanted to, Goskino, that they wanted to, you know, make an effort, a deliberate effort to invest in young Kazakh directors or young Kazakh producers, cinematographers working in the film industry. And so they created this special workshop that would be led by Sergei Solovev. And these guys that they chose went on to make some of these films that we're talking about here. You mentioned Rashid Nugmanov's The Needle, and Talgat Timirnov's films, A Wolf of Cub Amongst Little People, Sergei Kaprimov, The Last Stop, and so on and so on. There's many. And and I think I interviewed some of these guys, these directors who made these films, and their films are influenced very much by, well, French cinema, Italian cinema, European cinema in general. And you mentioned The New Wave. Actually, this was a title that Rashid Nugmanov, the director of the Igla, came up with when they were hosting a special section at the Moscow Films Festival in 1990. And they just it was a marketing device. It was as simple as that. I don't think it was a deliberate attempt to say, we're a specific, discrete genre within cinema or even Kazakh cinema. I think it was a deliberate kind of marketing label that they came up with just to promote themselves. But I think what's interesting about this period and these films is that they were really breaking with the conventions of the Soviet cinema making that had been prevalent in Kazakhstan in the 60s and the 70s. And they were doing some really fun, interesting stuff with films. Some of it was sort of very ethnographic, something like, Sergei Kaprimov's The Last Stop. A very ethnographic film, quite a, you know, a bleak film about, you know, the sort of social decay of a village, of a Primo's home village, actually. Or something like The Needle, which, of course, you have this very romantic, dandy-esque figure of Victor Tsoi playing Moro, the hero. And it's a film of fragments. It's a film about drugs. I guess it's a very art house film in the way that it's broken up, and it's a very playful film. And in fact, when I interviewed Nugmanov, he for him really the film was just about having fun with his friends, and I think that really comes across. I mean, I this is probably one of my favorite Kazakh films, actually, and in that sense. And and I think there's a real disruption of things going on with regards to the Kazakh New Wave. I think there's a disruption in terms of how they reimagine or reinterpret history, and in particular previous silences. So we start to see visual representations of things like the Stalinist repressions for the first time. I think there's a real negation of Soviet authority in these films. Again, actually, in Igla, this comes to pass, but also in another film like Balkon. And I think there's also then the other aspect I think that's important about the Kazakh New Wave is this focus on the realities, the social and economic realities of life in the late Soviet period, the difficult socioeconomic situation, the struggles that people are facing in the villages and also in the cities.
And what's your impression of these films today? Are they still popular? And I'm sure this was something new in the late 80s. So seeing these kind of films was at least novel, if not also that people actually really liked the films. Are they still popular today?
Yeah, that's, again, it's a very good question. I think it's slightly hard to answer. What I would say is, I think the films are popular with, you know, contemporary film directors. So some of the newer film directors that have emerged in the last decade or so, I think a lot of these films or that period has been an influence on them, not necessarily in terms of style, but I think in terms of the freedom that those directors from the late 80s, early 90s pursued in terms of their filmmaking. I think in a broader sense, the extent to which the Kazakhstani cinema going population are interested in these films, I think it's hard to say. I mean, these are what we would call art house films, right? I mean, and, you know, depressing films about poor villages in Kazakhstan are not to everyone's taste. And I think actually this is a broader discussion to be had about, you know, the popularity of Kazakh-made films in Kazakhstan. And I think actually there's a lot of disparaging remarks that I would come across from you know, sort of ordinary cinema goers in Kazakhstan about these types of films and actually about post-Soviet art house films as well. And I think there may be more of an interest in films that are, whether we could say are either more Russian, sort of contemporary Russian style, or more Hollywood in style, that feature more things like, you know, they're more thrillers or with car chases and gangsters and this type of thing. So, yeah, the extent to which I think these have lived long in the memory of the broader Kazakhstani population, I think is doubtful. But I think from, you know, sort of cinephiles and directors themselves, I think there's I think a lot of them are held in high esteem and as a really exciting and as in a really exciting period of Kazakh cinema and Kazakh filmmaking.
And this is a good transition point, because I want to move past the Soviet period and start talking about the development of film in independent, you know, post-independence Kazakhstan. Because one thing you mentioned in the book, and you just mentioned now too, is that there does seem to be a tension between art house films and films which are targeted to, let's say, broader audiences in Kazakhstan, but also maybe in general in the post-Soviet space. And there also seem to be some films that they are hoping, you know, the directors are hoping will be received well globally. So what's kind of a timeline for the development of post-Soviet Kazakh film industry? As far as I understand, following the collapse of the Union, the Soviet Union, there was kind of a period of, I don't know if we would call it stagnation or breakdown in this sector. But then, you know, by the early 2000s, I think you start to see films again. Is that correct? Or is there a more articulate way to explain the development of post-independent Kazakh film industry?
Yes, no, I think that's correct in brief terms. And I think the term stagnation is probably a good way to think about it. I mean, because, you know, the new wave arguably sort of goes into the early 90s and the early post-Soviet period, sort of 92, maybe 93. And you've got these great directors, really talented guys who have made some fantastic, exciting, interesting, different films from what we'd seen before in Kazakhstan. But then, because, like in many post-Soviet countries, the economic situation is pretty dire in the early 90s, and there's very little funding, very little state funding available for the production of film. There's very little private financing domestically in Kazakhstan for film. So a lot of these directors, people like Nugmanov or Omibayev, they have to find funding, and Neprimov, as I say, they find funding elsewhere, and that's usually in Europe. So, and you know, France in particular. And so a lot of them move abroad. A lot of the production of the films are also you know, sort of, although some of them were produced in Kazakhstan, the financing, the funding, and the audience to some extent is very much that international film circuit audience. It's, and I think in the post-Soviet period, that's where a lot of criticism has been subjected at the so-called art house type of cinema, is that directors, all they're interested in is, you know, getting some awards at the international film festival circuit, showing these sort of very depressing, bleak films about Kazakhstan. And so that's where those types of films and directors have been subjected to criticism. When things begin to change in Kazakhstan is by the early to mid 2000s, and it's principally actually government led. We see the government channel lots more money, state funds, I should say, into Kazakh film studios, and it takes on a large role as the sort of the major shareholder for the studios. But interestingly, and I think the first thing I'd say is, now principally that's done because Nazarbayev, who's the first president of Kazakhstan, you know, wants to make these big budget historical epics that begin to give us these foundation myths about Kazakh history and Kazakh nationhood. One of them, you know, the most famous, I think, in 2005, 2006 is Nomad, Kachevnik in Russian, and which is an interesting film if we want to talk about, you know, the failure of the concept of national cinema, which I'll come to in a second. But also as a consequence, to some extent, Kazakh film studios, my understanding from interviews and talking to people is that, yes, this money comes in from the government and it's state-led, and the studios are sort of under the direction of the Ministry of Culture. And the Ministry of Culture would dictate, you know, some of the types of films that need to be made. But at the same time, I think within the studios itself and the people working there, they had a lot of agency and a degree of flexibility and freedom to start to fund other interesting films, films that were more art house, a bit more edgy, were perhaps less of this sort of government-sponsored propaganda, either about Nazarbayev. Of course, there's a whole series of films that are about Nazarbayev. And these attempts at the sort of reinterpretation and imagination of history. So the situation is quite complex and fluid in that sense, that the government is funding and sponsoring films which it doesn't realise perhaps that it is sponsoring, that are smaller budget, aimed at a more art house audience, and are perhaps more critical and satirical of the domestic political scene or domestic or society in Kazakhstan as it had been in the post-Soviet period.
And I think that's right, because you, as you lay out in the book, we also see several kind of several themes within these films. You know, we have films which are kind of ethnocentric in their descriptions of the Kazakh nation. I'm thinking specifically about Minbala, which is about the Kazakh tribal defense against the Dzhungar Khanate that's coming across the steppe in the 18th century. And this is kind of meant to kind of brush up an ethnocentric narrative of Kazakhstan. But then you also have the opposite. You have this focus on the multinational or multi-ethnic, I should say, component of nationhood in Kazakh cinema. You know, the previous president Nazarbayev, the first president of Kazakhstan, was known for frequently mentioning the multinational nature of Kazakhstan. And then finally, we have some other themes that deal with social and economic issues. You identify the theme of Tengrism, which I want to get into a little bit. So for the book, as far as I understand, you did have the opportunity, or maybe you had research assistants, to do some breakout kind of discussions with film viewers. Is that right? What was your impression of, like, what kind of films are generally popular in Kazakhstan? Do people like this ethnocentric narrative, could you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, thanks. So, I mean, just to reiterate, I mean, this is, I guess, the main analytical argument of the book, is that in the post-Soviet period, we see all these different both complementary and contesting narratives and discourses about nation and identity, and we can observe this in cinema. And actually, this is what cinema helps us observe, these different narratives. And as you said, one is this sort of very ethnocentric narrative about Kazakh nationhood and identity, and it roots the formation of the Kazakh nation in these sort of battles against the Mongolian Dzungars. Then we have this civic narrative, which is about the sort of the multi-ethnic nature of Kazakhstan and how it's a, you know, it's a home for all these different kind of peoples, many of whom were transported or forced migrated to Kazakhstan and the Kazakh steppe during the Stalinist repressions. Then there's this Tengrist narrative, which we can come to in a bit, and also a socio-economic narrative about the sort of conditions of difficult socio-economic and political conditions of post-Soviet life. And yes, it's true. I undertook a few focus groups with cinema goers, and what I found was that, I mean, the first thing I should say, of course, that these focus groups were self-selecting. I mean, in the sense that it had to be people who, they were self-selecting. They're based in Almaty and Astana, and these are people who came, you know, who were happy to be invited and talk about it. I think that their views, in particular on the ethno narrative, was, I think it was 50-50. Some people really liked it, appreciated it, and other people thought this was horrible government propaganda. But also, interestingly, one of the really helpful things in terms of data collection was a forum that I found called kino.kz. And this was a really helpful way of mining the views or in terms of reception of what people felt about films and the extent to which, whether they understood also these films of possessing these types of narratives. And kino.kz is a forum where people will post reviews of films. And again, I think, particularly with the ethno-narrative in a film like Mumbalar, is actually a lot of people, particularly on the forum site, were really positive about the production value of that film. And even if they thought the message was, you know, this kind of government propaganda, some people thought it was great. They really buy the message and how important it is for the Kazakh nation and identity. So I think, just like with anything, I mean, films are a very subjective experience in terms of how we feel about them. And it was, some people love it, other people find it, you know, this kind of government propaganda that's, you know, in a very Soviet mode as well.
And so I want to come back to, okay, thank you for that. We have a good idea now of maybe the most obvious form of state-sponsored film, which is this ethnocentric narrative of Kazakh identity, in these historical kind of dramas, if we want to call it that. But you, in the book, you mentioned some other types of films, particularly the film writer Ermkek Tursunov and his films, which incorporate something called Tengrist thought or Tengrism. Can you define that for us and explain how this has a place in the role of filmmaking?
Yeah, so Tengrism, I think actually the films of Tursunov were a turning point, in particular when I first started this project and was writing the article, of allowing me to think about the relationship between Kazakh cinema and nation-building identity and the role of the, you know, the government and the state in a different way, because actually Tursunov's films are funded by Kazakh film studios, but I think they offered a very different take from that of the ethnocentric narrative we talked about, these big historical epics set in the 18th century, and even the civic narrative films, which are mostly set in the 1930s, and which both those sets of films and those sets of narratives kind of mirror Kazakh government policy when it comes to this sort of question of nation and identity, in that on the one hand, there's a sort of government policy is committed to sort of the ethnicization or the Kazakhification of of the state, but also it's committed to this sort of friendship of peoples, multi-ethnic Kazakhstan idea as well. So the Tengrist narrative of Tursunov's films were interesting. So Tengrism was the, the pagan religion of the steppe people, of the Turkic Mongol people, prior to the incursion of Islam into the Central Asian region. And it Tengri is the sky god, and it's the cult of worship of the sky god, and it's a religion which is based on this idea of the circle of life, of birth, life and death, and the cycle of that. And it's about the relationship that the Central Asian people have with nature, and the symbiosis with nature and with animals, and there's many different gods, and they're all represented in different sort of very natural elements like rain or water. So rain and water are the same thing. So rain and fire and so on. So it's like a cult of fire and earth. And there's a lot of shamanistic practices associated with Tengrism. But it's a very philosophical worldview, really. And I think why it's and Tursunov's films in particular, there's a film called Kelin, and which stands for sort of daughter-in-law or bride. And there's another film called Shal, Old Man. Really are these sort of visual representations of this Tengrist philosophy. And what it is a very sort of almost quasi-primordial interpretation of nationhood. And in those films, it's really rooting the idea of Kazakh nationhood as being rooted in the types of social relations that all nations are rooted in family, in the cycle of life, birth, and death, and then rebirth. And so it's a very different type of narrative to that is portrayed in these you know, these ethnocentric and civic narratives.
Well, we're getting near the end of our discussion here, but I wanted to ask, maybe this is the easiest question, maybe not, which of the Kazakh films that you've seen or watch for the research in this book is your personal favorite?
I think there's two. One of them we've already talked about. So I think Rashid Nagmanov's The Needle, which I won't go back to and talk again. I think the other one is by a young Kazakh director. It's called The Owners, Dilkhan Yerjanov. And it was released in 2014. It was actually funded by Kazakh Film Studios again. But it's a very, I think, critical film of social conditions in Kazakhstan, about the struggle for property ownership, about the difficult, challenging life that ordinary Kazakhs face. And to me, it very much sums up the sort of this socioeconomic narrative that I argue about, that actually what Kazakh nationhood is, what Kazakh identity is the everyday struggles that people face in the post-Soviet period, the everyday struggles they face economically, the everyday struggles they face against a faceless, you know, bureaucracy. And that film for me was an eye-opener. I thought the work of Yerzhanov is, he's a smart, really creative young director, really committed to, you know, to cinema and cinema in Kazakhstan. And I think that film really was the heart of the book, actually, in terms of, if we're talking about the story of Kazakhstan and the story of Kazakh cinema and what actually cinema can tell us about contemporary Kazakh society, I think we can see a lot of it in that film. It's a film that has not really been seen much in Kazakhstan. It's a film that received a lot of criticism from the government, from the Ministry of Culture. But I think it's a film that was and remains very powerful. It's I think so much at the heart of the book that it's also the opening shot of the film is on the front cover of the book.
Oh, great! I was wondering where that came from. Well, Rico, thank you very much for discussing this work with us. For the listeners, if you want to read more on this book, the title once again is "Film and Identity in Kazakhstan: Soviet and Post-Soviet Culture in Central Asia," published by IB Taurus. Enrico, I do have one more question for you. Are there any current projects you're working on or anything you're planning to do in the near future that you'd like to share with us?
There's a few things. I've gone back to working on political institutions. I'm planning to, my next book should be on, actually it'll be on Kyrgyzstan and what I call the struggle for parliamentarianism in Kyrgyzstan. I just came back from field work in Bishkek and in Kyrgyzstan over the last few months, where I've been working on that. And then outside of that, I'm also going back to do some work on political opposition in Kazakhstan, particularly in relation to recent events and the sort of with the resignation of Nazarbayev and a lot of the protests that have happened. So I want to have a look again at some of the developments around political opposition in Kazakhstan, the emergence of youth protests that have happened in the last few months.
That all sounds really fascinating. It's an interesting time to study the politics of Kazakhstan. Well, Rico, thank you for sharing your time with us. It was hopefully a pleasant discussion for both of us, and I'm sure the readers found a lot to be interested in. So thanks again for agreeing to do the interview. And hopefully we'll have you on to talk about your future work.
Okay, thank you very much.